Good evening. Welcome to our gathering at Mount Madonna Center in 2017. And we're about to start our memory session. So whoever wants to begin, we'll start first.
Yeah, I got one, but, it's not a big one, But anyway, during the time where I was at the Unity of Man conference in India, I had the chance to be at the Ramila grounds. And at the Ramila grounds, they had a section where they had all the medicines and the doctoral place, where they had it. And it just so happened that one of Master's relatives had fallen off his Vespa or something like that, had an accident. And he was in there on a cot laying down. But we had walked in. We wanted to see what it looked like, and there were nice medicines on the shelf, and we were looking around, and in walks Master. He walks right in, and we were just taken aback, but he walked right past us, didn't even look at us, walked right straight over to where this man was, his relative, and that was it. We looked at each other, but I got a lesson from that. I said, look how one-pointed Master was. He was just going for that one thing, only and only that thing. So that was one of the things at the Ramila ground, of course. But anyway, Master wanted me to be an ambassador there. So he told everyone, you have to join the inner circle of dignitaries that were at the Unity of Man conference. So I said, all right, what's there to lose? Master says, we all got to stand up, So I went up there. I wasn't a good speaker at all. But anyway, I added whatever I had to. Inyat Khan was there, a very educated man. And a few other, the Secretary of Agriculture. We were all sitting around in the round table forum. And when it came to my talk, I said, we are vegetarians. It would be nice if the whole world became a vegetarian, because we'd eliminate a lot of things, killing of animals and everything. But I didn't really go into depth, but it wasn't really good. It wasn't really good. But anyway, when I finished, I felt a little embarrassed, but I said, all right, Master told me that everyone should become an ambassador of his, so. Anyway, Inyat Khan came over to me later, says, you did a wonderful job. I'm so glad you stood up, and everything. Oh, I feel great. I did feel great after he told me that. So he was very nice. Yeah. So there's one other thing. So while the last days I was were at the ashram, I was in front of the Master, and he said to me, after we had talked, and he had given us me some prasad, and I had told him about my friends. I wanted to be the last one, so I let everybody go ahead of me, so I'd have a longer time to speak to Master, So Edna Seinrock was saying, no, you go. I said, no, somebody else go ahead of me. Go ahead. So finally, I got to be the last one, the Master talked to. And said, Master, my cousin, sends her regards to you, she's getting divorced because of the, she's having trouble. She didn't take the initiation because her husband was a meat eater, and his hands went up in the air like an old prophet. Ah, he said, that is the worst thing they could do if they get divorced. The worst thing. He said, Masters always entreat everyone to come together, especially husband and wife, not separate, If one gets initiated, it's no good. They have to become, he would always want the both of them to come together. As a unit. So then he told me something. He said, don't worry. He says, you will have peace. So I really didn't think that was such a good thing, you know, at the time. You know, I says, wow. I thought he would tell me, well, I'm going to have a great life, be a spiritual leader, you know, I'm going to rise up to great heights, you know. And all he said was, you'll have peace, you know. Like, so later on, I thought, oh, my goodness. You know, then I realized that this is something I've always wanted my whole life. Well, that's all I've got to say right now at this particular time. So I'll pass the baton to someone else. How about you, Dick?
What I want to talk about tonight is Donna Kelly. I was just talking to Don Dixon today, and he agreed that the book that he's putting out, it's a spiritual book, and it's titled Great Lovers of God. And I said, that book couldn't even be done unless we included Donna Kelly in it, because she was a great lover of God. But I want to say, I was with her the night that she died. And have anybody heard this story before? And I didn't. 3 weeks earlier, she had confided in me and said, in 3 weeks, she said, I'm leaving to go to Sawan Singh. And I said, no, don't leave. I said, you are my surrogate mother. I mean, I couldn't really exist without Donna. But I understood, and actually I more or less forgot it. And 3 weeks later, I was taking my wife's father home to Banning. And, of course, Donna was from Beaumont. And we drove by a hospital, and I suddenly, just out of nowhere, I said, Helen, stop the car and let me out. And when you continue taking your dad home. And Helen knew that I always did some crazy things, so she understood that I didn't even know why I was stopping at the hotel, I mean at the hospital, but I was. So I went in the hospital, and I said, do you have a Donna Kelly here? And they said, yes, but you won't be able to contact her because she probably, this is her last night. They felt that she would be passing. And so I said, well, can I go back and see her? And they said, yes, you can. So I went back and looked at Donna, and I thought myself, she's already gone. I mean, she was not responsive at all to what I was saying. But I also noted that her meal, she had not eaten. And I looked at it closely, and I thought it was, first of all, I thought it was potato with a cream sauce on it. But I looked at it closely, and it was fish. And then I understood why she probably hadn't eaten it, if she could eat at all. But I whispered to her and talked a little bit, and finally she opened her eyes and says, Richard, you know, she was so happy to see me. And then we talked a bit, and then suddenly Donna just, wow, she just opened her eyes so wide, and she seemed like her old self. And she says, Sawan has come. And, I mean, it lifted me up a long ways. And then I heard the beautiful sound. I didn't see Sawan, but I heard sound which I had never heard before. And the whole room lit up. And it was just, and I said, you know, I told Donna, I said, I would really like to go with you, but that wasn't possible. So, and we talked a bit. And then I said, I want to leave you with Sawin. I don't want to interfere with anymore. So I went out and waited for my wife to come back and take me. But that proved to me that everything that Kripal says about how he will be there at the time, he will be.
Donna Kelly was an initiate of Sawin, right?
Sawin.
Yeah, that's why Sawin came in, not Kripal. She was initiated by Sawin. Yeah. To take it down emotionally, this is more. it's just an event that happened during the tour, and I thought about it because I forgot who said they were on the 72 tour in New York City, and went to Master's talk at the talks at Hunter College. Well, we were able to go to the New York City part because my parents lived in Queens. We had the baby then. But having a baby, of course, and trying to keep on the schedule of the tour, you usually come late. So you drove from Queens to Hunter College, which I believe is close to Columbus Avenue. I may be incorrect on that, but I believe it's Columbus Avenue. And I'm saying because I know New York. That's my hometown. We'll never find a place to park anyway, so we'll do the best we can with Master's Grace. I don't know. So we drive up near Hunter and Columbus Avenue, and there's a place to park. Wow, Master's Grace. So we park there, and this was like an afternoon talk. So we saw the tour. After it was over, we said, okay, we have to go back now to relieve my parents from their beautiful grandson. And lo and behold, the reason we got the place to park because it happened to be Columbus Day. They had no parking Columbus Day, and the parade was going on. Columbus Day, it was Italians marching down Columbus. And we looked down all Columbus Avenue where the parade was, and there was only one car, as far as I could see, my car. And we didn't know what to do. Well, we came run to not in the middle of the parade and pull out. So we waited until the parade passed. And then went to the car and just drove away. And to see this, I mean, telling it, I couldn't do it justice, but to see this, it was like the car was invisible. I mean, it's for a mile that you could see straight down, no other car.
Invisible to the police.
Invisible to the marchers, to this day.
Looking at the movies yesterday, last night, the ones that Charlie Fulcher put together, Master's last month, July and August, there is a whole other dynamic going on. There was this outer world that we saw last night with Master being busy every minute of every day. But the evenings, there was always time for us. There were a small group, bodied people, and we would climb the stairs to his bedroom and small bedroom. He was in the cot, in his bed, which was a cot, basically. And those little darshans were recorded after Master stopped recording. They were put together by Livia and I in Master's Grace Lives On. There was one incident at the beginning before, when I first came. I was feeling I'd had a meeting with Master and given him a few things that the satsang, the Long Island satsang, had sent. And he was, he said something about stopping recording, and I couldn't understand why. And I felt I was doing something really wrong because we were collecting all these talks and going to put them into a book. So the next day I was in my room crying. I was really feeling really bad that I was doing something to displease Master. This was around 7:30 at night, and it was raining. And this sounds like an inner experience, but it really wasn't. I was pulled to go to see Master. So in the rain, I walked to his house. It was a bit of a distance. I really didn't feel I knew the way, but I was there. I was in the house, and Master, I was transfixed because Master was sitting on his cot, and he was gold. He was sparkling. I couldn't see his face. He was all gold. But he was talking, and he was asking me why I was sad. And I said I was feeling I was displeasing. I was doing something that I shouldn't be doing. At that particular point, he told me that he had told the person who I thought I was working with to leave, to stop all taping. And I didn't know that this person was making his own book. Master did not want duplication, and at one point he even told him when he wouldn't stop to leave. And I was getting, and so Master told me that I was to continue, and he sent me back to the room, to my room. And I never shared all of the details of this particular experience.
Give it a shot before I forget my story. when Master was coming on the tour in 72, I started to get nervous for all our usual reasons. So we did a house cleaning, just get all the dubious stuff out of the house. Now, I lived out in the middle of nowhere. The likelihood of Master coming physically to my house was pretty zero, but just the reality of the fact that he's coming. And we had a copy of The Path of the Masters by Julian Johnson, the revised edition, which, oddly enough, Master liked it because it was less critical of the Christian faith. But it had also been gutted of any real attributes of the Master and stuff like that. It was really... So I didn't like having that book in my house. You know, I go, this is just wrong. But it was beautifully made and beautifully bound and, you know, all that stuff. And we've been going to a library in Toronto and, you know, getting stuff from them. So we said, you know, we'll throw it into the book return basket, and it's out of our hands, you know. And I wrote the name of the Toronto group leader. They had all the contacts for the Charan Singh people, but, you know, I go, there's no point in that. So, you know, Master come, this and that. After Master died, we moved out west, and we ended up in Penticton in western Canada. And the Shine Rocks had set up this thing where they had a meditation hall, and everyone went to the meditation hall. It was really good training ground for getting some good habits. And at one of the weekend parties, it was something like this, because there were about 30 people in the group. Jugi and Jim were part of that group. And you get talking to people, this and that, and one couple, I just kind of knew, you know, they had shown up in Toronto just before everyone left, so to speak. We asked them, how'd they get on the path, you know? Well, they were just kind of looking around, and they got talking to this librarian. This librarian says, I've got this funny book, you know, you have a look at that. And, you know, listen to this guy, I don't know. I can't believe it. Master will use what you're throwing out. And to even take it one step further, at one point, this couple had told the story of how they were initiated, where they heard about him coming in 72, and the husband got to the church where they were giving the meditation, but the wife thought it was in the afternoon rather than in the morning. So, of course, she got there in the afternoon, and Master was already gone. So she had to travel to Chicago, where Master was there for 8 days. Well, she got there on day one or two or something like that, and realized that the initiation wasn't until day seven or something like that. And her job is on a case to come back to work and all, you know. She traveled back and forth two places a few times. But, and of course, keep in mind that I do sell Master's books, so I guess I have some book karma somewhere.
You've probably heard some of these before, but I went to India to be with Master in October of 1971. Totally green. I really hardly knew anything about the path. There weren't that many books at that time. Anyway, I used to be a photographer while I was at university. And news photography was kind of very aggressive. And I brought my camera with me to India. And I was very reluctant to use it. I just felt like I was, you know, impinging on Master's space. So I didn't touch the camera for at least a month. And then one day, as a group of photographers came to Manav Kendra to take a picture of Master to put on the 1972 calendar. So they had their equipment set up, and Master was standing by the Mansarovar, and I thought, yes. So I ran back to the room, got my camera, and when they were finished, I went up to Master and I asked Master, Master, would it be okay if I took your picture? And he says, yes, surely, he says. And then he says, but you know, the best pictures are taken candidly. And that was a big relief to me. I thought, that's great. And after that, I didn't, you know, I felt less reluctant to take pictures of the Master. But the first group of pictures I took were a little strange because, again, I was very new to the path. I had some very preconceived notions of what a God-man would be. And I didn't expect a God-man to have, you know, to be a human being. To be a real human being, have a human body, and to be a perfect human being. So I was kind of enthralled by all these little things he did. So I'd be there with the camera, and, you know, Master would clear his throat and reach for a spittoon, you know, click, you know, or you know, I thought it was, oh, this is amazing. And then, you know, or reach under his turban to scratch his head, click, you know, or scratch his leg, click, you know, or comb his beard, click. And anyway, I got over it. But I sent that roll of film back to the Sangam in Vancouver, and I'm sure they must have thought that was pretty strange pictures. And then just shortly after that, beginning of December, Pakistan declared war against India. And Manav Kendra happened to be in the vicinity of a military base. So Master called the Westerners, there weren't that many of us together, and he advised us all to go home. And I think some people were kind of relieved to, you know, that they really wanted to go but didn't know how to go about it. So it was a real way out for them. And I thought about it, I said to the master, I have nothing to go back home to. And I really didn't. I had no attachments at all. Would it be okay if I stayed? And he said, well, it's, you know, dangerous. And I said, well, I couldn't think of a better place to die if I have to die than with you, you know. And he that's okay. He said, and we were standing outside, and he pointed to, there's a wall that separated Manav Kendra from the Dehradun Highway. You know, he said, if soldiers come over that wall, he said, I can't run and hide. I have to stay and defend, you know, defend the innocent and the weak. And he made it understood that, you know, if we were staying, we were going to have to do the same thing, which really blew my mind, because I realized my concept of nonviolence was, you know, was very limited. Because the next thing he said is that if you have to fight, you have to do it, and he called it non-retaliatory. You have to have, you can't have a retaliatory motive. In other words, I guess basically love your enemies, but at the same time you're fighting them. And that, you know, that stayed with me for, well, all my life. Just considering what state a person would have to be in to be able to achieve that, you know, that level of oneness. And anyway, for me, it was a great lesson. That still is. So. Then it was getting to be, you know, getting toward Christmas. I think there was about 8 Westerners there at the time. And we'd been watching families come to the ashram, especially during holidays, Diwali and so on. Master would sit on the porch and the families would come up to pay their respects. And they'd always have, you know, stacked boxes of burfi and bags of candy, and sometimes it seemed like a production line. Master would just be blessing all his candy and stuff. And again, you know, being so new, I had no idea about prasad at all. This was something totally new to me. So another fellow and I, we thought, well, Christmas is coming up. Wouldn't it be nice if we made up some little bags of, you know, fruit and nuts and asked the master to bless them and hand them out to the Westerners for Christmas. So we went into Dehradun and we brought dried fruits and nuts and some bits of cloth, and we made these little bags, one for everyone. And we made up a little card with the picture of Bhava Sawant Singh on the cover. And Master sat in one chair when he came in for darshan, And then there was another chair. So we put the card on the one chair, and we put all the bags in the, on the seat of the other chair. So Master came in. I think he was a little preoccupied, and he started to sit down in his chair, and we're going, "No, Master, don't sit down." And he's going, "What? What? What?" And, you know, there's the card. He looks at the card, Baba San Singh, okay, and puts it down. He says, "So, what's this?" And we said, "Well, Master, it's coming on to Christmas," and we gave him the whole spiel. And he turns around and looks at the two of us, and he says, "You people don't know the meaning of prasad." And I was totally gobsmacked. And he turned around and he took the little bags, opened them all up, and poured the contents out in the seat of the chair. And then he started running his hands through them. He says, "All right, for every piece of this prasad, you have to do 1 hour, above the usual meditation," which at that time was 6 hours he was asking us to do at Manav Kendra. And I didn't get it. I heard this later when somebody told me. But my friend got it. You know, he got it. And so he went up, and Master reached in and gave him a handful of the prasad. And then I clued in and went up, and everybody got a nice handful of prasad. It was all. But again, yeah, I didn't. I had no clue about what prasad was or what it meant. And then it was very sweet because the next day he came to where we were staying, and he came and personally served us our lunch. He gave us our food as well. There's somebody took a picture of that. It's on one of the cover. I think it's on the front of one of the Sat Sandesh magazines, of Master serving the food. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not going to talk in detail, but since you spoke about prasad, I can tell you that my mother always made something at home whenever she went to see Master. And I had gone from the States to India, and the first thing my mother said, "You never come to see me, you come to see Master." And so I couldn't say, I said, "No, Mom, I come to see you too." And so she said, "Okay, you're going to Delhi, and that's the first thing you're going to do is go to the ashram and see Master." I said, "Yes." So she made these little out of sugar, flour, like laddus, you know, round sweets, and she put it in a box, and we went, and so she handed the whole box to Master, and he said, looked at her and said, "You made them, didn't you?" She said, "Yes, I did." And then he opened the box, and each laddu he rolled in his fingers, looked at them carefully, and gave one to my mother. Then the other also, he rolled in his between his fingers and gave one to me. And then I think all of you who've been to Savan Ashram, you know Kuku. Yeah, well, she was there, and there was not Taiji, but another well-built person, woman. So he looked at her and he said, "You'll need two." And he gave him her too.
This isn't per se a Master experience, because I never met Master physically. But I feel like I just got a gift from him. Rami and I didn't meet last time we were here, but we fell into friendship, and so did Cassandra and I. But I learned today that Rami was at my initiation. It was a small group in John Lovelace's basement. And I remember her there as clearly as she knew she was there. So thank you, Master.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to say, but When I see these movies of the 72 tour, it brings up a lot for me because I was I was initiated about 6 years before the tour, and had been a group leader and had tried to be a good satsangi, you know, and failed in many ways, I'm sure, in many ways. But all my life since my childhood, I had this dream of being with Master, maybe not alone, but in an intimate setting. And from the very beginning of joining the 72 tour, well, first of all, there was such thing as small group darshans at most places. And we were told, no, you are not allowed to go to any small group darshans because you can go to the small group darshans in your satsang, where you come from. So everybody was going to the small group darshans, and I couldn't get to go to the small group darshans. And there are always these very big, aggressive, representative type people who would send us away. And we were made, or at least I understood what I was being told, is that we were rabble that were bothering Master and didn't belong there, that the real satsangis were the satsangis that had known him since the 55 tour, and they had special meetings with him where they got to have meals with him, and we didn't belong to that group, and I didn't belong to any group that could go to a small group darshan. So I was allowed to ask questions. They would have these little lines where you could sit and you'd have to have a question, and if you didn't have a question, somebody would be very, very gruff with you and say, if you don't have a question, get out of the way. Ask Master a question. Don't just sit there and look at him. So, you know, it was like, so I asked questions, some of them pretty stupid questions, but that was my chance to get darshan from Master. And I remember every single question I asked and what he said. But there weren't really that many opportunities for that. So, at the one hand, it was just wonderful to see and hear Master, and on the other hand, there was this deep disappointment that I had that I just felt like nobody. I just felt like I was just this nobody in a large crowd of unwanted people that was bothering and getting in the way of the people that really deserved to see Master. And so, so we went from place to place, and there were some incredible experiences. Master can make it feel like you're in all alone with him in the midst of a large crowd of people in a miraculous way, and I probably can't tell those stories because in some way I think there may be inner experiences, though I don't really know what's an inner experience or an outer experience, because, you know, I can't think of any times of being with Master that were not somehow magical and probably prohibited from relating or what. But especially at Sampani. Boy, at Sampani it was just like being alone with him. But I mean, I didn't get to be in any of the small groups, and so I still had this sort of disappointment. And then finally, when we got to California and I was in the satsang where I had helped organize the tour and whatnot, I was told no, because you've gotten to be on the tour, so the people that live here are going to have it, but you can't be in a small group darshan. So I the only small group darshan was the one that we saw filmed last night, which was about 80 people in a room where Master only gave attention to this guy who was not an initiate and was not talking to him about anything spiritual, was just, they're just talking about how things were going in his business or something like that. And I was really jealous. I would have very bad to be like that around the Master, but if I'm honest, that's not what I felt. And that's why I remembered that film so vividly. So I hadn't gotten to go to any small group darshans, and we were running out of money and any ability to travel, and I needed to go back to work, and we had a toddler, and it was hard traveling, but we got to L.A., and L.A. was a long stop, and we got a lot of opportunities to hear Master's talk. And so it was really near the end of the LA tour, and it was this night that Master went to Yogi Bhajan's place, and Yogi Bhajan had this, I don't really remember the external circumstances, but it was kind of swanky, kind of LA-ish kind of place. And he had all these people singing to Master, and Master was up on stage. And as satsangis, we were in the audience, but I mean, this was a Yogi Bhajan event, and Master was blessing Yogi Bhajan's place. And afterward, Master went with Yogi Bhajan into some inner thing. I thought I'd heard that Yogi Bhajan was showing Master his temple place or whatever it was, ashram. And I just got petulant. It was a city street, and there was a concrete sidewalk, and then there was these buildings where Master had gone in with Yogi Bhajan, and I thought, well, he's probably going to be coming out in 5 minutes or something. And Susie and Simon, my wife, and we had a ride back, but I just sat on the concrete, and I said, I'm not going, I'm not moving, I'm not going anywhere until Master comes out. So we just waited. And it wasn't a 5 minute tour. At some point I'm not very good at sitting on concrete, but at some point I just started meditating. And I was just meditating, and I probably an hour, maybe more than an hour went by. And all of a sudden I felt on my shoulder this hand just reach and push my shoulder, and I opened up my eyes, and it was Master. And he looked in my eyes and he said, "Hello." So that was my small group darshan. I'm going to tell one other story from the tour, which was, and then, oh, unless somebody, is it okay? I think I've told this before, but there, a lot of the best experiences I had with Master was because I would be standing holding my son, who was about a year and a half old, and there was this great, I think I've told it before about when we were in the Hilton hotel lobby in New York, but this is a story about when we were in Santa Clara outside that place that was, we saw the movie of, and Master was in this, I think it was maybe Reno Serene's car. It was a big white Cadillac, and everybody had crowded around it down there, but I couldn't go darshan dog because, first of all, because I never got darshan when I darshan dogged anyway, but also because it was just, I couldn't, with Simon, I was just sort of staying put, and I was just holding him. So the car, Master got in the car, and everybody would cry, and then they left. And I was just standing by the road with Simon, and the car drove up, and then I saw Master go, and they stopped. And Master rolled down his window, and it was just me and Simon. I don't remember anybody else there. And he was looking at Simon. He was looking in Simon's eyes. He didn't look in my eyes, but he looked in Simon's eyes, and my eyes were wide open, so this is not an inner experience, but he stopped being a man. He wasn't a man anymore. He was just like, I don't know, I don't have any descriptive terms, but he just became this, was like a waterfall of light, and it was just pouring into Simon, and he didn't even look remotely like a man. He just looked like a waterfall. That was very memorable. the elevator.
Is that the New York thing?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that story.
Okay, well, this is... My master was giving meditation sittings up on the 10th floor of the Hilton, New York Hilton Hotel. It was somewhere downtown Manhattan. And it was a New York Hilton Hotel. I mean, upstairs at the 10th, this 10th floor special meeting space where master was doing the meditation sittings and the interviews and stuff. He was, that was sort of satsang territory, but we were just down in the lobby of the New York Hilton Hotel. It was not like some kind of satsangi space or anything. And I was just trying to, it was Susie's turn to be at the meditation, so she was upstairs. It was during the time of the meditation. The meditation was between like 10 and 11, and she was up there. So I was just sort of hanging out with Simon, and he was really liking the New York Hilton lobby. It was lots of interesting things. He especially liked the elevator, so he walked up and was looking at the people getting off and on the elevator and off and on the elevator. And up to that time, we never saw a master without this phalanx of representatives. I don't want to give you the idea that I'm not loving of representatives, but you know, they, again, I already sort of said how I felt about it. And so Simon was looking at the people getting off and on the elevator, and around the corner, during the time in which he was upstairs giving the meditation sitting, as far as I know, came master. No representatives, no crowd of adoring darshan dogs, just master. And he came around the corner, and Simon was sitting here, standing there, looking at the people getting off and on the elevator, and master walked up to behind him and just reached down and picked him up and turned him around and looked like that in his eyes. And Simon was a really twitchy kid. He was just kind of a little bit hyperkinetic and fragile kind of person, and he was just going. And master looked in his eyes for about a really long time. I don't know. And then he put down Simon and walked away. I have no further explanation of how this took place or anything, but I'm quite sure it took place. And what was really interesting is that Simon, for the next several months at least, would go into these things where he would just sit there and go. And he was just a really changed person. He just became very calm. To this day, he's now 46 years old, exemplary parent, just an extremely calm person. And I think that was possibly a life-changing incident. And interestingly, of my kids, he's not ever gotten initiation, although he doesn't remember hardly any of his life before 5 years old, but he remembers Master's eyes. So one thing he remembers.
Experience I had in Penticton. John mentioned the group in Penticton, and I was there, and I went out there. I was in pretty bad, messed up psychological state, more so than I usually am. And I took an Amtrak, to show you how desperate I was, I took an Amtrak out to Penticton to Pisenu the Kluwitz, and they offered me a little respite from, you know, I could spend a week there or so. And I went out there, and this is what I remember, because, look, at our age, what we want reassurance is that Master will be there when the time comes. And there was this couple, I forget their name. One was initiated. I think the husband was initiated, but the mother wasn't. But they had a teenage son who was initiated at an earlier age into the sound current. And he passed away recently.
teenage boy. And the parents told me that he never really cared about the path. He didn't care about the master. He just wanted to be a regular kid, hang out with his peer group, and go to McDonald's. That was all. And then he got very ill, and he died. So I asked the mother, well, how could you still be on the path, you know, with this traumatic experience? What worse experience than a mother losing a teenage son? And she said, as he was dying, he said, the master is here. I am going home.
Okay. Good night, everybody. That was wonderful. Thank you.